I cannot express to you how much I enjoy a player that takes zero possessions off. Like, he is, I don't know, the embodiment of the type of player that I really enjoy. Offensively, defensively, he is going to go until he can't anymore. And that is just an admirable way to do anything, right? I try to live my life that way as far as the work goes, but it's tough. Welcome back to the Kenny Beachin podcast as we film this on a Thursday morning where I am as sick as can be, y'all. I am as sick as can be. And I said, you know what? The show must go on. So I'm just going to say right now, if this video or this episode is not as lengthy as some of the other ones, or if we see a lot of jump cuts, that means I am clear my throat. I am coughing up stuff and just, I'm not feeling great, y'all. But the last 30 hours or 36 hours or so, I had just been in bed. And that's not how I like to do things. My joy is when I'm doing this. And I have been without joy for the last day or so. So I need this more than you need to watch this. I need to create this content. Be sure to leave a like, subscribe, do all of the stuff I normally tell you to do. I'm not going through the spiel. Quick stop. I want to let you know that the basketball enthusiast hats are restocked. Last time we had these, they sold out in a matter of hours. It was kind of crazy. We didn't know y'all was going to mess with it that much. So we decided to redrop it right in time for spring. The basketball enthusiast, yours will look a lot better than this because I've been wearing this for like a year. So it's a little dusty, but go ahead, tap in, man. Links is in the description. Enjoybball.com. Go get you one. The best thing, if there's any silver lining to being sick, at least for me, is that when I'm sick, I'm bedridden, which means that there is no excuse to not watch basketball. You know what I'm saying? When you're 100% healthy, it's like, go out to dinner or watch Lakers versus Clippers. I could catch up on Lakers versus Clippers in the morning. When you're in bed, there's no going out to dinner. There's no doing this. There's no doing that. So last night I was watching Lakers versus Clippers and watched the Lakers have this amazing, amazing comeback versus one of the better teams in basketball. Of course, missing players here. It don't matter. That's not really important to me. And it was amazing. And it got me thinking, as I watched LeBron James dominate the fourth quarter when he's nearing 40 years old, it got me thinking about the 10 most exciting players to watch in basketball. This is a subjective list. You might agree or disagree completely, and that is completely okay. Everybody prioritizes different things in players that they enjoy watching or they're fans of. If your favorite player not here, I'm not going to say I'm sorry. I'm actually not going to say I'm sorry. It's just that they didn't make the top 10. They don't make them bad. They don't make them unwatchable. But these are just the 10 players personally that when they are playing, it is my objective to watch them as much as possible. These people on this list, this is such an elite group of guys that I would watch their game live. And then after it's wrapped up, either way, it'd be the next morning or whatever, I'm going back to watch their possessions too. I just watched them for 40 minutes. And I said, I can't get enough. Let me go back and rewatch the things that they did, especially if they had a really good game. Obviously, near 40-year-old LeBron is on this list. Spoiler alert. In previous years, he's probably been number one. But as he's got to his older age, we see him, do I want to use the word coasting? I don't know, because he's still averaging ridiculous numbers. But it's not as insane as even 4 years ago, but he's still broad. So, of course, he's in this list because I don't want to take that man for granted whatsoever. I'm watching this game last night versus the Clippers. And I'm watching it with my significant other. We're laying in bed. Somehow, I'm sick as can be, and she ain't called a single day. I don't understand how sickness works. I don't. We've been sleeping in the same bed, doing everything we normally do. And she ain't even coughed. She ain't sneezed one time. But we're watching this game. And it's rare that my wife watches basketball with me. You know, she enjoys basketball, but not to the sicko mode that I be in. Sicko mode? Not to the, that's the sickness in my brain. Did I just reference sicko mode in 2024? Yes, I did. But because I wasn't feeling the greatest. And I ain't gonna lie. When I'm feeling sick, I like to be babied a little bit. So she's laying in bed with me. And there's this one play late in the fourth quarter where D'Angelo Russell did the thing that the purest thing in basketball, if you ask me, a no-dip jump shot. She said, "What is that?" I said, "That's basketball, baby. That's basketball, baby." D'Angelo Russell. One of the questions from the last episode that I did not get to, it was an Ask KB question. Was he starting five of the no-dip jump shooters, right? If you're new around here, that is my favorite thing in basketball, where a catch-and-shoot player catches the ball no matter where the pass was and shoots it on release. did not dip down to get into their own pocket, did not get it. No, they catch and they shoot immediately. D'Angelo Russell is on that list now. He's done it too many times. And doing it in the clutch is kind of some insane stuff. So we got a list of Nicholas Batum, who's the captain of this. He's one of the people that I saw do it for years and never really thought about it too much. I was like, wait, what's that? Jeremy Grant is also on this list. He's been doing it a bunch over the last couple seasons. D'Angelo Russell was on this list. And I was trying to figure out some other people, because every NBA player can do this, right? It's about, because if you have 1 second on the clock, you don't have time to get into your regular shooter motion. So, like, I've seen Duncan Robinson do it, but a lot of the times it's just because he's rushed. A player like Nicholas Batum, it don't matter how many seconds on the shot clock. Sometimes he's just going to get it up that way. D'Angelo Russell, in this scenario, I'm pretty sure it was a couple seconds left, so he got it up like that. But he has been able to do it if there is 17 seconds on the shot clock. You know what I'm saying? So I've seen other players do it. I don't know who else is on this list. You let me know in the comment section. If somebody on your favorite team is a no-dip jump shooter, let me know. Because I was rewatching trying to answer this question, and like some of the people that I remember doing it, like Bogey Bogdanovich, I went through and watched almost every single one of his three-point attempts this season. Because I was like, I know I've seen him do it before. I think it was 5 times out of however many attempts. So that's a decent volume when you consider the thing we're talking about, but not enough to maybe make the same. So you let me know in the comment section. Anyway, I want to get to the top 10 most watchable players in basketball. But I need to address one thing. And the only reason I haven't addressed this on my other channels or on Twitter is because, again, I've been sick. The last thing I want to do is go on goddamn Twitter when I'm sick. But I did this morning because I'm feeling 7% better. There's a section of Nets Twitter that's not liking me right now. And listen, I always say this when I tell you to tell your best friend about basketball podcasts, let them know about Kenny Beecham. I always say, I know I'm not the cup of tea for everybody. You know what I'm saying? Everybody likes their different things. Some people like super hot takes. Some people like debate. Some people like cool, calm, collected. I would like to think I'm that. But in a video where I was talking about the LA Clippers rebranding, I tried to put these on a parallel, right? I said in that video that the Clippers are under an immense amount of pressure to win a championship and make the Kawhi Leonard, Paul George era have something to show for, other than saying like, hey, we brought in more fans because we got 2 marketable NBA players. We got an arena, new brand, but they need some type of jewelry or something to say that this was a successful era outside of like financially, we blew it out of the water. And I put it on the same level as the Brooklyn Nets. I said, because the KD and Kyrie thing did not, and James Harden eventually thing did not work out, I wouldn't be surprised if Brooklyn is not on the top of the next superstars list when they are asking out. That's what I said. I didn't think that was too much of a hot take, but there's a portion of Nets Twitter that was like, oh, Kenny don't, what is Kenny talking about? He's clickbaiting, which I always say, I could tell who watches videos and who's just seeing clip outs. And again, I'm not upset about you just seeing a clip out. It was on your Twitter feed, of course. Yeah, comments on it. I'm not saying you're wrong in that. But the title of that video was "The Los Angeles Clippers Rebranding is Interesting." It wasn't "The Nets Failed." That's clickbait. The video was, that was a 2-minute video portion of that 10-minute video about the Nets. It definitely was a clickbait. I gave my honest opinion about the failure that was what the Brooklyn Nets put together. And it is the biggest what-if team in the history of basketball, if you ask me. And I said that because that didn't work out, the next star players probably aren't looking towards Brooklyn. I think that's fair. Some people don't. And again, I don't need people to agree with the opinion. You know what I'm saying? But I do want to ask, if you weren't a Nets fan, what do you think then? If you put Your personal allegiance to the side. See, it happened. Your personal allegiance to the side. Is that a bold take of me that I just put out there? It's not like Brooklyn has historically been a place that has signed superstar free agency. That was the place. That was the time that you've done it. If I would have said the same thing about the Lakers, who always win in free agency, then that would have been kind of wild. But Brooklyn, the teams that they've made, the only times that they've really been able to go out there and sign star players was this version of them. The other versions that had star players, it wasn't strictly free agency that they did that. You know? You tell me if you think KG, Paul Pierce, and them at that age would consider star players. I would give them the benefit of the doubt. that wasn't free agency. That was a big trade that gave up Jaylen Brown and stuff, if you forgot. And the eventual first overall pick. So again, I'm just saying, to each his own, but I don't think I deserve the flack that y'all was throwing at a brother. That's it. That's it. Okay? This portion of the Kenny Beachin Podcast is brought to you by Factor. Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals make eating better easier. Now, this family has been a dedicated Factor family for some time. The reason I really enjoy it is because these are curated dishes from real chefs. They have 35 different options every single week. And no matter what your restrictions are, because we have restrictions in this house, you're probably going to find something for you. Factor has like restaurant quality meals that are ready in just 2 minutes. You find the meal, you poke some holes at the top shit, you put it in the microwave for 2 minutes, you come back and boom, your lunch, your dinner, whatever it may be, is ready to eat. And for whatever reason, you don't have two minutes. You ain't got 2 minutes. They have snacks, they have smoothies, they have desserts. I've used some of their snacks as like a breakfast replacement, because I guess that time I didn't have 2 minutes. And also the smoothies help a lot too. And Factor is super flexible with the schedule. You can have as little as 6 meals a week and as high as 18 meals a week, and you can cancel or reschedule or pause at any time. Head over to factormeals.com and use code ENJOY50 at checkout so you can get 50% off your first box with Factor. That's code ENJOY50 at factormeals.com/ENJOY50. Shout out to Factor for sponsoring this part of the podcast. Before we get to the list and stuff, right? There is a report from Real GM, and I'm going to read it to you verbatim. The NBA Competition Committee has officially begun reviewing whether the game has become too advantageous for offense and whether some changes needed to be implemented to achieve better balance. Basically, the thing that a lot of NBA fans have been saying for the last, let's say, 5 years or so, it's such an offensive-oriented league, right? We're seeing all-time numbers. We've seen 70-point games here, there, all in between. Nowadays, if a team don't put up 110, it was a bad offensive day. When 10 years ago you put up 110, you're like, damn, nobody was messing with y'all. So it has shifted dramatically. I think a lot of that is because the talent has just got better. You look at the people across the association, everybody can shoot. Offensive schemes are just better. They're smarter. When you combine better X's and O's and better talent, we're talking about offense being the thing. And that's our league right now. And I'm not one to complain. Only thing I really care about is competitiveness. If the score was 200 to 202, yeah, I take that back. I probably wouldn't enjoy that. But for the most part, it's really just about the competitive nature. Too many times in our game nowadays, because the three-point shot is such heavily relied on, you can boil down, and this is something that I talked to a family friend of mine recently who likes basketball but doesn't love the NBA. He's more of a college basketball guy. And he said, this is his opinion, that if you look at what team made more threes, 90% of the time, that is a team that ends up winning the basketball game. And that's just not fun to him. And I was like, okay, I wonder what the truth is in that. So I went down and I started this research maybe 2 months ago, where I went through every single game for months to say, who made more threes and did that team end up winning? Now, I went through and I personally charted 137 games. I know, hey, if you're into coding, I know there's a very easy way to do this. Hell, I probably could have just Googled this and somebody's already done it. But I did it on myself. I'm going to round these numbers just so they're clean. And the data from this season that I've accumulated in the 100 and something games, 84% of the time, the team that made more three-pointers won the game. That's a lot. 7% of the time, the teams made exactly the same amount of threes, and the remainder percentage, the team that lost the three-point battle, end up winning the game. So you let me know if my buddy, a family friend of mine, you let me know if those numbers support his case, because kind of. And as the best example of this that happened recently is, I said I wasn't going to talk about them anymore, but my Chicago Bulls just did it. They had the worst three-point shooting volume night in the history of basketball, the lowest three-point percent of any team to attempt 25 threes. I think they made 2 out of almost 30, and they lost the game to the Detroit Pistons, who deserved a win. I'll say it. They deserved a win. They had one taken away from them because the referees didn't call the foul on Asar Thompson versus the Knicks, and then Paolo Banchero hit a game-winning shot on them 2 nights before that, so they needed a win. They could be on a 3-game win streak right now, but they're not. The Bulls had an all-time terrible shooting night. and that's just the way it, that's the way it goes. You know, that's the way it goes. The Bulls, and the only reason I'm referencing this game is not just because it's my favorite team, even though I vowed never to talk about them again this season, is because the Bulls won every single battle that matters. They won the defensive battle. The defensive rebound battle, the offensive rebound battle, the assist battle, the bench points battle, the points in the paints battle. They won every single statistical battle there was, except for the three-point shot. And they lost to the Detroit Pistons. So, okay. There's a lot of offense, and a lot of it is three-point shooting. So we got a lot of people thinking, what could be done, right? What could be done in our league by Adam Silver and company to make it so that this thing that we call basketball is not just offensive oriented? And there was a lot of great suggestions. The one that I am the fan of the most is, my tweet was goodbye 3 seconds in the paint, defensive 3 seconds. They got a lot of traction, a lot of buzz. That's not an opinion that's like, oh my God, I broke the world, because across the world, 3 seconds, defensive 3 seconds is not a thing. College basketball, FIBA basketball, you can camp down in the paint if you want to defensively in every other place other than here in the NBA. So it's not a crazy thing that I just came up with. I don't think Adam Silver and them are that crazy to say like, hey, this rule is void. But I would like the idea of extending it a little bit. Now, this is an idea that I actually heard on JJ Redick's podcast. He had Luka Doncic. And Luka, 3 years ago, has said that scoring in the NBA is a lot easier than scoring overseas, mostly because you're not seeing a seven-foot dude standing under the basket all times. And the way the Dallas Mavericks play basketball, who had their heart taken out of them a couple of days ago by Max Strus on a 59-foot three-point shot or something like that to win the game. The way they play basketball is like, hey, spread, pick, and roll. We're going to do what we got to do. Sometimes it's five out. It's like a Maxi Kleber and Luka Doncic. He plays at his own pace, but he can get past his defenders. So it's layup after layup and so on and so forth. Where when he plays overseas, you can't really do that because in a lot of cases, that five man is kind of sitting or he's roaming and protecting that paint. So the idea is not get rid of the 3 seconds in the paint, but extend it to 4 to 5 seconds. And I kind of like that idea if we want to get the scores a little bit closer. That also, it's going to make it that Victor Wembanyama goes down as the greatest basketball player in the history of this sport. So maybe you don't want that. There was another one back, Kurt Goldsberry, and I think it was NBA Universe, that was like, get rid of corner threes. Now, this is an idea that I've heard a bunch over the last couple seasons or the last couple years as far as people advocating for this. I also think that's too far. And like, it's too much to take away that shot. It's such an integral part. My tweet was goodbye, PJ Tucker, even though PJ Tucker kind of been going for a little while now. But like, if you look at his shot chart, it's all corner threes. And there is a genre of NBA player that is who they are. If you take away their corner three, the offense have to get more interesting. And that's why I'm not completely against it, but I think it's just too far away for them to do it in one singular season. And a lot of people ask me, like, Kenny, do you think that Adam Silver is going to incorporate something this offseason? And I don't know. I don't know how fast you work on these type of things. If anything, I think that they, one thing that happens in Major League Baseball, at least, is that they do some things in the minors. Here's a robo ump. See what that looks like for a couple games. And then if it works, then we bring it up. And that's kind of the way I think they're probably going to play this. So we're probably thinking a couple years down the line before they make any major adjustments. But I do like that Adam Silver is aware of these type of things, that he wants more competitive basketball. He wants more defensive oriented basketball, because I think it would just be better for the game itself. Another idea that I think is probably the best idea, just call the games as if they're playoffs every night. Because everybody recognizes that, like, oh my God, this player gets 12 free throws a night in the regular season, but look how it's only 7 once we get to the postseason. What has changed? His play style ain't changed, but the whistle is a lot tighter. Let's just play the game that way. Is it more stressful for our referees to play it that way? I don't know, but I like the idea of letting them boys play. And if you let them play as if it was the playoffs, a lot of the foul baiting that a lot of people complain about is completely gone and so on and so forth. Do it like it's the playoffs and let the players adjust. I am 100% confident that no matter what we decide to do, whether it be 5 seconds in the paint, get rid of the three-point line, call it as if it was the playoffs, our players in our league are so talented, they will adapt. And the product is not going to change to the sense that it's going to be unwatchable all of a sudden because we made a defensive change. Let the boys hand check. Everybody say that. I think hand check is still kind of a thing. Let the boys hand check. Let them do whatever they want. No, okay. Not whatever they want. Somebody said give them an extra foul. I don't even know how do we use that extra foul? I don't know. You let me know in the comment section. FanDuel is putting the ball in your court for the rest of the NBA season. Because right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any $5 winning bet. That's $150. if your bet wins. And you can bet on a wide range of things in the NBA, like quick bets, live same game parlays, player props, and many more. So visit FanDuel.com/Kenny and make your first bet a layup. FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NBA. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame money line wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued with non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbooks.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG. In Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinepa.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts. Or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NEW-YORK or text HOPE-NEW-YORK in New York. Now it's time to get to it. The top 10 players in excitement, watchability, whatever you want to call it. Now, part of this, or not all, part of this, all of this is based on this season, right? So if a player historically is amazing to watch, but this season maybe they've taken a little back step, I take that into consideration. This is a 2023-2024 list, okay? Which it did in 2020, I don't give a damn about in this particular list. So number 10 on my list is Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards is the main offensive focal point on one of the best teams of basketball. Again, they're a defensive-oriented team. Like, that's what they lately had. They got Rudy Gobert, who, if I had honorable mentions, Rudy Gobert would be on the list. The reason he's not on the list is I think that y'all would think that I lose all credibility if I have Rudy Gobert on the list. But let me explain it. Again, he's not on the list. Anthony Edwards is instead. But let me explain why Rudy Gobert is in conversations, right? I've seen Rudy Gobert play basketball live in person three different times, twice here in Chicago, and then once when I went to Milwaukee a couple weeks ago for the trade deadline. And every single one of the time, his defensive impact is so much more apparent in person. Also, watchability can go for the stupidness too. The man has stone hands. If he dribbles, it looks weird. Like, that matters to me as far as watchability goes. But I'm also just like a Rudy Gobert super fan, and the defense is real, and it's as real as can be. Anyway. But instead, it's Anthony Edwards, high-flying guy. There was a game a couple nights ago, not their last game against the Memphis Grizzlies, but the game right before that, where the fourth quarter was all Anthony Edwards. And it was a beauty to watch. It was get to my spot, high off the glass, bank shot. It was get to the basket, spin move, turn around. Like, he has so many, like, oh, man, this is probably going to make me sound terrible. But, like, he is a hooper's hooper. Difficult shot taker, difficult shot maker. And that's fun. Right. There's as crazy as it can be. And sometimes it's a negative, Anthony. Sometimes it's a negative. Those crazy shots, the high difficulty shots are amazing to watch. And sometimes, yeah, we get to the fourth quarter. One of those shots don't go in. Two of those shots don't go in. Three of those shots don't go in. You're like, man, can we go get an easy one? Ant? But that's part of the game, because when they are going in, they are going in. Number nine on my list. I don't know how many of y'all expected this guy to be here. Jalen Brunson, and the reason I really enjoy Jalen Brunson's play is I'm talking about, I met Jalen Brunson at All-Star Weekend, and I think I mentioned this before. I am 5'7", 5'8", if we being generous. Me and Jalen Brunson was just slightly taller than me, if that's what it felt like, at least. We were both wearing the same shoe, so that I didn't have an advantage there. No, we weren't, because I had to switch shoes. But no advantage, I don't think. I had the book ones on. And I can't imagine being, let's say, roughly six foot, and averaging 27 points per game, being the number one option on a really, really good team. And the reason why it's so amazing is because he, of course, plays like a guard, but at the same time, he doesn't. The footwork that this man implements on a nightly basis is ridiculous. as crazy as it sounds, there are a lot of times where he is the smaller guy on the court, but he's also one of the bigger guys on the court. He'll take you into that post and footwork you to death. Earlier in the season, there was a little bit of noise on Twitter. It was like, oh my God, Jalen Brunson's mid-range game is gone. His in-between game is awful. He's hitting his three-point shots, but he can't get to the mid-range. He's getting to the basket. All of that is gone. He's been one of the best and most impactful players in basketball for over a year now. If you look back to like January last year when it started to really, really turn for him, and he's done nothing but get better and better and better and better. Big shot maker, big shot taker. And it does help that he's left-handed. Like, I cannot explain to you. I love watching left-handed players. I think that majority of them are silky smooth and just have cool games. Yeah, I think Jalen Brunson is one of those guys. Number 8 on my list is going to be Kevin Durant. Didn't he say don't call him that? Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is still one of those guys. And though it may not be to the same extent as like 3-4 years ago, I mean, he's still putting up ridiculous, ridiculous numbers. The only thing I complain about a little bit when I watch the Phoenix Suns, and it's been an up and down season, where like some days I watch, I'm like, yes, this is the team. I think they're going to compete for a championship. And other days it's like, are we really the third worst fourth quarter team ever? Now, that was a little while ago. I don't know if that's still the case, but they're still one of the worst fourth quarter teams in current basketball. They still have blown, I think, the second most 10-point leads behind the Washington Wizards. Like, that happens a lot. But when it's clicking, and Kevin could get to his spots. Again, I watched him do a double clutch game winning shot versus my Bulls a couple weeks ago. And it's like, that is such a tough shot, especially with Alex Caruso roaming around, to have the mindset to be like, oh, I can hang in the air for an extra second and clutch it a second time and then get the shot off. If you put a smaller defender on him, right over him, And if you put a bigger defender on him, right through you. And again, I still have my things about Kevin Durant in his older age. And maybe I just have to accept the fact that he's just not going to get to the basket as much as you kind of want a guy of his caliber too. But the in-between game and the three-point game has been phenomenal. So it's like, okay, he doesn't get to the basket as much. But if the rest is the rest, and the rest is the rest. Number 7 on my list, and maybe this is low, you let me know. You let me know. I'm here. That y'all gonna hate this one. LeBron James. All right. He was the catalyst for today's episode. Watching him do that was a 19-point quarter versus the Clippers. Ridiculous, ridiculous stuff. Again, one of the greatest to ever do it, if not the greatest to ever do it. He's been on a tear for the last couple seasons. And it doesn't make any sense. As long as he's been healthy, he's been phenomenal. And again, there are times, I think I mentioned this earlier, where it feels like he's coasting. But yesterday was not one of them times, man. At least once we got to the fourth quarter, it was not one of them times. And to see him to do it from the three-point basket and then do some stuff in between, he made a couple ridiculous, ridiculous passes. I love it. And if you didn't know, LeBron James is just 40 points away from 40,000, which is insane, right? Which is insane, 40,000. And I don't think he's getting the next game, but he could. He could give us a little 40 piece. He goes a little 40. It don't happen too often in his old age, but I'm assuming it's going to be not this game, but next game. I think it's a home game too. So I think he kind of want to probably do it at home, but 40,000 points is ridiculous. Now, if you go to FanDuel Sportsbook, you can see the odds on how he scores that 40,000th point. Right now, it is a plus 750 on a layup, a plus 300 on a three-point shot, a plus 320 on other. What is other? Oh, is that like that's like a midi. That could be a something in between, because you also got free throw and dunk. I pray it's not a free throw. I want to see something electric. I want to see a three-point shot personally. I want to see when he looked down at the ball, he say, this is for 40. And I hope, and this is going to sound stupid, but I hope that he hits 40 on the dot and not 40,001 with that shot. You know what I'm saying? It's just ugly. Can we just get 40,000 by itself? 4 bunch of zeros. So you could go to FanDuel Sportsbook and try to see what you think. And it's under NBA Special. See what you think is the way LeBron does it. You know, remember he was trying to do the Kareem hook shot to pass Kareem, and he was practicing it, and then it ended up being a shot that he probably should have passed to Thomas Bryant. But it said it was Bron doing his thing. So 40,000, again, shout out to Bron. And I don't think, he's not stopping anytime soon. Number 6 on my list. And this is where, again, things are probably going to get kind of interesting, because you most people probably have these flipped. Number 6 is Victor Wembanyama. Yes, yes, yes. It's Rook. It is the rookie. Victor Wembanyama is number six on my list, and I almost put him higher. And I know it started off somewhat rough the first month and a half of the season. It wasn't terrible. It just wasn't the play we're getting right now. A Spurs team with, 11 wins on the season should not get this many nights of me watching them. But I'm here every day because I'm trying to see how is he doing these things? And the answer is he's a freak of nature. He puts the time in. And he just has his basketball IQ is kind of insane. Some of the passes that he is objectively the best passer on the entire roster right now. That's saying a lot about him. It's also saying a lot about the rest of the people on the team. But his basketball IQ is so ridiculous that I believe that, again, once he has a better group of guys around him, there's no stopping this dude. Especially if Adam Silver is going to start incorporating some rules where he can defend a little bit better. We have a question later on the Ask KB segment that's revolving around Vic a little bit. So I'm going to stop right there on the Victor Wembanyama. Number five on my list is Giannis Antetokounmpo. I cannot express to you how much I enjoy a player that takes zero possessions off. Like, he is, I don't know, the embodiment of the type of player that I really enjoy. Offensively, defensively, he is going to go until he can't anymore. And that is just an admirable way to do anything, right? I try to live my life that way as far as the work goes, but it's tough. And he's doing it. He's physically doing it. Like, I'm filming these videos in a chair. He's physically going 100% every single rep, and he's still doing, 30 a night? So the defense is still good. Like, the defense under Doc Rivers looks miles ahead of what it looked a couple months ago or a couple weeks ago under Adrian Griffin. And a lot of that is, again, Giannis playing his roamer and Brook Lopez, who we talked about on the last episode. But he's just going and going and going, and those are the type of things I admire. He's never going to just give up, and that means a lot. Number four on my list is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. There's a lot to be said about a player that plays at his own pace that you cannot speed him up. You cannot slow them down. And he's going to get to his spots. Let me count them. 1, 2, 3. There's 5 spots on the court that I deem the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander area. Most of them are in the mid-range. It's like this left elbow. He get that. A slightly more to the left of the left elbow. I think there's an actual term for it, but I ain't got it. He going to get to that spot. And if he gets to that spot, you might as well get back on offense because he's going to hit that shot more likely than not. So to have him do his thing and get his 31 points and eight rebounds every single night is ridiculous. It's really ridiculous. And right now, I think he's second in MVP amongst a lot of people. The latest straw poll had him number 2 behind Nikola Jokic and stuff. It's kind of insane what he's doing at this young age. And we saw a lot of this last year, of course, because he was all NBA first team. But he took that and he built upon it. And now that the team is winning and stuff, there's no other conversations that can be had, especially if they go out and make a run. Because right now, you know how the goalpost moves. You know how it is. Oh, he makes all NBA first team, but he ain't make the playoffs. Okay, his team is the number 2 seed in the playoffs right now. Let me see him win a playoff series. Like, the goalpost continues to move for Shai, and every time it has moved, he's been able to still kick the field goal, I guess. Number 3 on my list is my current MVP is Nikola Jokic. I've talked about this before. My MVP ranking has fluctuated a bunch, as it should, because you have 2 straight weeks of Jokic doing this thing. You have 2 straight weeks of Luka. You have 2 straight weeks of Shai. You have 2 straight weeks of Giannis. Like, it's all over the place. If you disagree, that's completely okay. There's so many great candidates. But the way Jokic can break down a defensive team, defensively, is ridiculous. Our friend Ben Taylor at Thinking Basketball put together a video maybe a week or so ago where he wants you to try to read the floor like Nikola Jokic, and the things that he can see, Nikola Jokic can see. I struggled to see when the game footage was paused. They paused the footage. And I was like, who's open right now? And Jokic, again, is doing that in real time. He is the best passer in basketball. He's one of the 3 best passers I've ever seen with my own 2 eyes. And he has the opportunity to go down as the one. He has the opportunity to go down as the one. And he just continues to break teams down on a nightly basis. And right now, I would say a lot of it feels like he's coasting. He'll give you 15, 15, and 14, 13, 15, and 14. Like, those are ridiculous stat lines, don't get me wrong, but he's not giving you that 25 piece, that 30 piece. And as long as him and Jamal Murray are in the lineup, the team has been virtually unbeatable, and that's why they're still my favorite to come out of the Western Conference. Number 2 on my list is Wardell Stephen Curry. What can I really say? Revolutionized the game. Still one of the greatest watches in basketball. Even if his team is not being really successful, you can see how much he cares when something stupid happens in a game and how he'll fake throw his mouthpiece and all of these things. But The degree of difficulty on a lot of the shots that he takes and makes is still otherworldly. Even when he gets to the basket, the high scooping, floating layup is still marvelous to watch. And again, it's been this way for maybe a decade at this point. Yeah, probably a decade at this point. That when Steph Curry's hooping, I'm watching because I don't really know what to expect. One of the coolest things in basketball is when a player can put up a shot and walk away before it goes in. And Steph Curry is he's the king of that. And number one on my list. And you should probably saw this coming because I've done nothing but rave of the times I've watched this player. It's Luka Doncic. The best basketball game I've ever been to. As far as, and it wasn't just like, oh my God, it went to overtime or it was a double overtime game winner. The best basketball game I've ever been to was watching Luka Doncic at the Barclays Center. This was October of 2022. So early in the season, this is KD, Kyrie versus Luka Doncic and stuff. Spencer Dinwiddie hit some buckets. Ben Simmons played and he scored the first basket of the game. I'll never forget that, Ben. I'll never forget that you hit the first basket of the game. And that was the moment of time. Again, as a guy that's watched Luka on TV a ton, I've obviously admired his game. I've enjoyed his game. But I will always tell people who will listen, if you have the opportunity to watch Luka Doncic live, there's no better experience than that in basketball to me. I watched him. I'm lucky. Shout out to the Brooklyn Nets. They put me court side for that game. We did some stuff with a Polaroid camera. It was really cool. And I can't lie. They gave me the Polaroid camera. It was like, take some pictures of the Nets. I'm like, cool. Here go a picture. KD, smack. Here go a picture. Kyrie, smack. There go Luka. Smack, 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 smack. Like, I'm taking a lot of pictures of Luka. They ain't published none of those. But like, I forgot where I was. Luka is a show. Last night, as I'm waiting for the other games to start, the first game of the night was Raptors versus Mavericks. And I want to say right off rip, I apologize to the Raptors fan base out there. A couple episodes ago, I put together a list of teams that I won't be watching for the rest of the season. Like, the idea was these are the teams that are so out of it or so not fun to watch that I won't be tuning in. I'll watch highlights of the specific players, but it was like Wizards. It was this team. It was that team. Like, bad teams. And the Raptors were on that list. I'm here to say, I apologize. They're not on that list anymore. I've been enjoying the Raptors for the last 2 weeks or so. You know, one of the things my dad instilled in me is that a man can admit when he's wrong. And I was wrong about the Raptors. They're running. They're gunning. And as soon as either those players develop three-point shots or they get players that can shoot threes, Darko Rajakovic's offense is going to be up there. But that's not what we're talking about today. But shout out to the Raptors. Last night, there was a game versus the Raptors. And I think it's Matt Devlin and Jack Armstrong are the commentary crew of the Raptors. I'm bad at remembering those names, but that's one of my favorite commentary crews in basketball. And so I'm watching this game from their perspective. And there were three different times in the first half where Luka did something that the broadcast were completely silent. Like, I don't think I've ever seen that before. And one of them didn't make the highlight. Like, there's the one where he passed it behind his head that you saw on House of Highlights at ESPN, whatever, whatever. There's one play that didn't make it because Derrick Jones Jr. missed a shot in the corner. But Luka's being guarded by, I don't remember who it was. Luka takes the ball out of his right hand and he's on the right side, right wing of the court in isolation five-out ball right now. Derrick Jones Jr. is open in the left corner. Luka takes the ball with his right hand and one hand swings it to the corner. But Derrick Jones Jr. missed a shot, so you probably ain't see that on the highlight reel. But he had multiple times like this throughout the game, and that is the experience of Luka Doncic. So he is my number one. Snuff from the list is Joel Embiid. That's not anything about Joel Embiid. Again, like I mentioned in the beginning of the video, this is about this season. So Joel Embiid missing as much time as he has. He just does not make the cut. Jason Tatum was a tough, tough cut. Kawhi Leonard was a tough, tough cut. Kawhi Leonard will probably be my 11. Jason Tatum probably be my 12. And again, Joel Embiid with the injury. And then who else is on my list? Tyrese Haliburton was very high, but he dropped a little bit. And then Donovan Mitchell too. But those are my top 10. Players, you let me know in the comment section who you put on, who'd you take off. Before we get out, we got to do our favorite segment, hashtag AskKB. The first one comes from Caleb, the NBA Facts. He says, over under 20 all defensive selections between Chet, Wimby, Bilal Coulibaly, and the Thompson Twins. And I thought about like 20. That's a lot, ain't it? And then you're like, well, Wimby dead ass is probably going to make it this season. And that's without his team being a good defensive team. So again, I keep saying this with Wimby. Imagine when he has competent teammates and the defense is top 15. He's a lock to make it for every season that he is healthy. He's a lock. And I'm praying we get 10 to 15 years of healthy Wimby. So let's say that accounts for half of it. Chet Holmgren is also a guy that could make it every single year. Will he make it every single year? I don't know. But he could. So let's count Chet for six. Being cautious with it. Six. The Thompson twins are kind of insane. Bilal Coulibaly. Kind of insane. If you told me the line was at 20.5, as crazy as it sounds, I'm probably hitting the over because and maybe it's unrealistic to think a perfect health for these players. It's 100% unrealistic to think perfect health for these players, but good health, over. Give me the over. This one comes from B-Drip, 1K. How many games do you watch at a time and how are you able to keep up with multiple games being on at the same time? Now, this has definitely changed. Let's say a year or two ago, if a game was on, I had it on one of my monitors. And what I realized was that's not a very effective way to kind of digest the things that you're seeing, right? Imagine we have a slate where seven games are on at the same time, which happens sometime, right? You got the end of the 6 o'clock games and then the start of like the 8 o'clock games and everything. You're not actually watching the games. It's basically for a show. Because, you look at the first box. You talk about two quad boxes, eight games. You're watching the first box. Okay, that's interesting. You're not watching the other three because you're watching the first box. So I told myself that every single night, I'm going to select a few games to really dive into. If we have a slate of 10 games, I am focusing on three of those games and praying that I picked correctly. And then the games that I miss, I'm watching the highlights of or watching all possessions of or picking players that may have had good nights or bad nights and watching their possessions. It is impossible to watch every single game every single time. So, and there are games that completely go under the radar. Like last night, trying to think of like Denver versus the Kings. That game, I was keeping track of the score, but I don't really know the story of that game. I watched 0 seconds. I saw that the Kings were up by double digits. Then I looked back and they were down by 20. Like, I don't know. I know De'Aaron Fox didn't play, but I don't know the story of that game. I opted to not watch that, but to focus on Lakers versus Clippers. The Bulls game. I only watched fourth quarter and the two overtimes because I was focused on Dallas versus the Toronto Raptors, right? And there are going to be nights where I pick the wrong game. Damn, there's a 20-point blowout. And then I shift over to some of the other ones. Or I would see like, oh my God, this game is close with 4 minutes to go. I know I'm focused on this game, but I'm okay with putting this game to the side right now to watch how the last 4 minutes of this close game really ends up. And then when I'm bridging the gaps, I'm listening to other people that care about these teams. I'm reading articles that are written about these teams from specific markets. And so I'm trying to never leave anything unnoticed. It's impossible, right? We're talking about 30 different basketball teams that play 82 games each. Like, it's impossible, but I try my damnedest to make that happen. I always got to try to get one non-basketball in before we get out of here. This comes from Millie. Trying to convince my friend who only plays COD, 2K, and Valorant how great Baldur's Gate is. Do you think people who only play those type of games can't get into a game like Baldur's Gate or Mike and P that way? The answer to your second question, Mike and P that way, 100%. One game that came out recently and it was on the top of the world. It was, oh man, what is the name? Oh my God, Lethal Company. Party game. Horror party game. The lengths I had to go to convince these boys to just play this game. Just give it a try. So what was it, a $10 game? It might even be a free game. Download it. Let's have fun. The lengths I had to go to get them to play anything outside of that, it's tough. But what I will say, I don't think there's anything wrong with the people that only play the select few things. But I don't like to hear those people complain about gaming being dead because they refuse to play the games other than the games they're familiar with. You know what I'm saying? A game like Baldur's Gate, I can 100% agree it's not going to be for everybody. If I somehow convince P or Mike to play those games, they're not going to enjoy it, even though it's an amazing storyline. The mechanics are phenomenal. The customization is ridiculous. You can play it 100 times in every single way. It's different. Some people are just not going to like the turn-based nature of it. You know what I'm saying? So it's okay if you're one of those people that play COD and 2K and Madden and every yearly release game. But you have to realize that there are a lot of games outside those yearly releases that are phenomenal. And if you're not up for it, that's fine. But don't talk about how gaming is dead, baby, because it's definitely not. You just have to get through those yearly releases and get to the other stuff. And that's where I'm going to end it, y'all. If you enjoyed it, be sure to leave it a like. Let me know the 10 players in the association that you feel the most interested in watching. Let me know what you think about Adam Silver potentially making changes and everything that we talk about in this video. I appreciate you. 5 stars. Leave a like, subscribe, all of the above, and I'll see y'all soon.